The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs, and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable tales of terror. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show. Disclaimer. Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Well, hello, listeners, and welcome back to Horror Hill. I'm your host, Eric Peabody. Now, I know that you just came to and might be a little disoriented, but you'll get your bearings soon enough. And hey, as we're about to find out in tonight's episode, there are far stranger and far more dangerous places in which you could have awoken. Take, for instance, an amorphous, mysterious, and mildly threatening afterlife. That's where the protagonist of one of tonight's stories, Heaven's Prisoner by Tobias Wade, wakes up, after all. Why, you get to sit here and listen to my dulcet tones instead of trying to wrap your head around a series of world-shattering revelations, all while talking to a bureaucratic koala, your sense of self and reality vanishing like so much smoke on the wind. And speaking of smoke, it looks like there are some fresh threats to be found there as well. We all know that cigarettes are bad for you, but in Smoking Kills by Micah Edwards, a chipper man with a strange talent shows us just how swiftly fatal they can actually be. Now, why don't you nestle down and relax? The night is young, and there are oh so many terrors for us to endure. You're listening to the free edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, so what are you waiting for? Also, if you're watching on YouTube, do us a favor and drop a like and subscribe. Become part of our dark circle, listeners. And now, from author Tobias Wade, I give you Heaven's Prisoner. I wasn't ready when I died. I held her hand until the end, and then beyond. Death stole many illusions from me. The first was that my body had been designed to perceive the world around me. This is incorrect. The primary function of my senses must have been to stop myself from experiencing what truly was. Otherwise, I would have been overwhelmed and driven mad by the chaos that I had now returned to. The web of all things concealed no longer, I found my strand and ran it to the center of creation. Eyes, which had once simplified the world into finite wavelengths of color, closed for the last time. And now I saw everything. My ears, once deaf to the cosmic music of birthing stars, now bludgeoned me with concussive blows. I did not see or hear any longer, but I was reflected in the light. The rising exuberance of the notes was my triumph, and I could be found in the chorus wherever it was heard. While I lay claim to these experiences, I cannot say my body existed to experience them at all. I was simply aware of how the universe must feel about itself when jealous humans are not polluting its minds with their own importance. What poor words are these to hold a candle to the sun and praise its light? Even the distinction between my senses decayed alongside my corporeal prison. Starlight was a symphony heard as much as seen, bathing me in a warm embrace. The taste of light and noise left me hungry for the peace of darkness. It's impossible to measure how long I existed in such a state, but by gradual degrees, I learned to separate my own thoughts from the medley of existence. The moment I began to comprehend my own internal voice, I became aware of a second voice that was not my own. 478 points. Hey, Jason, you closed that passenger pigeon room yet? I told you we don't do those anymore. Hi. Excuse me? I said to the unrepentant chaos of the universe. Here you go. Let me help you with that. The maelstrom replied comfortingly. Remember what I said about the confused synesthesia of my senses? Now imagine being struck by lightning and hearing and tasting and smelling the electricity coursing through my new body, which hadn't been there before. I found myself with hands and knees to collapse onto the stone floor. My new lungs raced a marathon. My heart wanted out of its chest. Not my chest. It couldn't be. This stranger's body. The stranger's mind rising unsteadily into a strange new world. My eyes burned with spots of light as though I had just been staring into the sun. Holy shit, did that hurt. I kind of wanted to do it again. 478 points, up from 314 last time. Solid performance. I don't know what was harder to accept. My naked new body, the colossal stone cathedral I discovered around me, or the koala bear who sat cross-legged with a clipboard. He wore reading glasses on the end of his nose, which he adjusted while flipping another page. Oh, that explains it, the koala said in its soothingly gruff undertone. You gained an extra 50 points for loving someone and being loved in return. That's always a nice boost. Then you picked up another 20 from that album you released in the 80s, touched more lives than you'll know with that. Did you know someone once got married to that song? Of course, someone else offed themselves to it too, but I don't suppose that's your fault. You were keeping score? I asked. I ran both hands along my face. The beard I wore when I died was gone. I was younger again. It wasn't real, but it was the only thing that was real. Of course we're keeping score. Hate to think what people got up to if we weren't. The koala flipped another page with his claw and furrowed his little brow. Lost 12 points because he stopped visiting Mark when he got cancer. But look, you got a few of those back when you played at his funeral. Hey Jason, what's accepting your own imperfections worth? We got new numbers on that yet? The koala was answered by the incomprehensible shriek of an eagle. Damn, man. Right back at you, my furry guide hollered. Have you always been a koala? I asked. Have you always asked stupid questions? How many points should we dock for that? Kidding. Sort of. This way now. The koala slid the clipboard under his stubby arm and began a brisk waddle. I hurried to keep pace. I was self-conscious about my nakedness for only a moment, but there didn't seem to be any other humans about. I allowed myself to walk freely through the absolute zoo which thronged the stone hallway onward, up the great diverging marble staircase with its mountain goats and wolves perched amiably upon the steps, past the library, the shelves bustled with scaling monkeys, some flinging books at one another, over the little stone bridge above the pools filled with playing otters and thrashing fish, beneath the gargantuan golden dome revolving with teeming flights of birds. The koala explained my wonder as we went. Long story short, if your life brought more good into the world than evil, you're going to end up with more points than you started. Your 478 points can unlock any of the rooms on this floor, except for the psychic and the prophet, which are both 500. You need to get over 1,000 before you unlock any of the truly supernatural creatures. I looked at all the animals and coughed. At least it didn't smell like a zoo. I don't suppose they were real bodies at all, but only spirits crawling and slithering and flapping their way through the celestial palace. I looked over the marble rail carved with lions to peer into the darkness of the stairway below. Underneath the main floor of the cathedral, the descending staircase was lined with burning torches. The staircase didn't go far that way before being blocked by a black iron fencing. If this place felt like heaven, then hell was only a stone's throw away. "I don't think I would mind being an otter, or a bird," I said. I had to deliberately resist the urge to pick up my guide and wear him on my shoulders. I was still too dazed from my own death and journey through eternity to know what to ask, but I didn't want to risk saying or doing something stupid and losing my precious points.
"Think of your choice as an investment. Coming back as a human will be expensive, but you also have the greatest capacity to improve your score.
Or greatest risk of losing my score, right? I've never heard of Dolphin Hitler."
"Not for lack of trying, I'm sure," the koala huffed indignantly.
I got the impression that it was his job to show me around, and he was beginning to resent it every time I interrupted and made it take longer. He continued,
"It takes many generations of good behavior to unlock the best lives. I'm only a few points away from being a unicorn, you know. I figured a koala that stayed in the system was a safe way to get the last ones I need. Nothing bad I can do here, right? I ain't never done nothing bad my whole koala life."
The indignant shriek of the eagle challenged this, but the koala waved it off.
"The only rule is that you pick a new life within your budget. So go ahead, look around. Let me know when you've made your choice."
"What would happen if I didn't have any points?"
"You would begin again at the bottom as the lowliest of life forms, the Chihuahua. It's the only option, I'm afraid. Why else would there be so many of them?" "Hey, Jason, did you hear what I just..."
I flinched in anticipation as the eagle hurtled past my ear. I persisted, "What if I went below zero? Would I never get to live again? And who was I before this? And who runs this place? And hey, The questions tumbled over one another to get out. I hadn't been aware koalas even could grin before this moment, its sharp teeth gnashed as though ready to bite me.
"Planning to be wicked already, are we? This way, then, you'll find what you seek."
The koala climbed clumsily onto the marble railing, still clutching his clipboard. He held on loosely and winked as he began to slide down the way we came. The eagle named Jason let out a pitying croak as it took flight and circled above us. We left behind the animals and their play as we descended the marble staircase. Through the stone floor, the light from above immediately shrank and was swallowed up until it was only a distant moon. The air here was heavy from smoking torches.
"These creatures don't mind the dark, and they drink smoke like water. Lose enough points, and your only choice will be a creature so foul that you may despair of ever doing good and being saved. Some of these poor souls will double down and trudge ever lower, one life at a time spent stealing good from the world. Their miserable lives are their damnation." We stood before the closed iron gates now. There were more torches in the darkness beyond, fearsome eyes in the shadows jealously guarding the flickering light.
I felt suddenly conscious of my nakedness again, feeling vulnerable and weak. I had no business here, but I felt safe in the koala's comforting and casual presence. I felt like a tourist, lost in amazement ever since my death. I couldn't imagine how dangerous it might be to ask, "Can we open the gate? I want to see them too before I decide." The koala squirmed and trembled. He looked over his shoulder for his friend, the eagle, but it wouldn't descend so far down the cursed stairs. It perched in the distance on the marble rail, its noble crest framed against the moon of light.
"Yeah, that's my job, right? Show you the options."
The koala slapped itself across the face.
"Points are on the line here, buddy. You doing your job, man?"
"Of course you are, man.
It's always watching. Shake it off. Let's go."
"What is watching? Who's judging?"
The koala shook its fur like it was shedding water. It took the clipboard and detached a small iron key. Looking reproachfully over its shoulder one last time at the distant eagle, my guide moved to unlock the iron gate. The moment he touched the bars, a dark meteor slammed into the metal gate from the other side. Black fists, black hands and feet, with curling claws wrapped around the bars. It looked like some kind of huge monkey, but for its red eyes and fur, which swirled around its body like living smoke. It clung on and howled, the sound deep and grating, harsh and discordant, like metal shards going down a garbage disposal. "The copy wants out." The koala hesitated, his key frozen in the lock, staring at the howling beast. "Why would you choose to live a cursed life like that? Are you sure you want to go down here?" I wasn't sure at all. But if I was going to return to life and do good, then I had to know what other monstrous things lurked beside me. Maybe I could have gone my whole life forgetting such an evil could exist, but that wouldn't make me safe from them. And even so, I would have turned around and gone back upstairs if it hadn't been for the whisper drawing me onward. "Your next life waits for you." It wasn't coming from the monkey. Curling up from the darkness below, the words came with the familiar synesthesia from before. I didn't know if I heard them at all, but they were there crawling on my skin, slithering down my throat, and drawing my eyes to probe the shifting depths of shadow. I grinned, certain that it was not my fate to live a normal life. I would not hide from the mysterious call. "Open the gate," I said. The key turned. The copy demon dropped away from the bars and lunged for the opening. It froze from an eagle's shriek fast approaching from above. Jason had decided to join us after all and sailed ahead down the stairs. The copy howled and chased after it, leaving the way open for us. The koala locked the door behind it. "There's nothing here you want." The koala still clung to the iron key in a trembling paw. "It is waiting for you." The itch of the whisper lured me onward. I closed my eyes and let the words tickle my skin. "Do not take the life you're given. Do not play their game. Do not follow their rules. You are born for more than endless death. Find me. Break free. Release." The sensation of the words was not pleasant, but I believed them. The koala might know more than he said, and he might not. But he was a cog in the machine, trapped in the cycle of birth and death like the rest of us. What called to me was something else entirely, and my only hope of unraveling the true mysteries of this place. And more than that, it was my ego that listened most gratefully. My life must have more purpose than these points could measure. I wouldn't go back to a meaningless, ordinary life. I had no patience to grind generations of good behavior to fulfill my destiny. These words and promises from the darkness squirmed across my skin, and I did not feel naked any longer. I wore them like armor, knowing I would not be harassed by the creatures while the voice still needed me. And such creatures they were, green and yellow eyes leering from the shadows, or misshapen gargoyles clinging onto the underside of the stairs. Grotesque faces like statues recarved themselves before my eyes to scream in silent agony. Some creatures were chaotic amalgamations, like the chimera stitched together from other animals. It sat in the center of the stairs and did not move out of the way. Its lion head turned to watch, as did the black-scaled serpent tail, which twitched menacingly above its back. Evil spirits haunted the air thick as smoke this far down. Cackling laughter echoed from all sides. Harpies sailed through the air, taunting and screeching, their feminine features twisted into hideous mockeries. The beating wings had the rhythm of infernal drums. The stairway beyond the chimera opened into lower halls of stone with innumerable torches marching into endless night. Rows of locked rooms contained the dull beating of countless imprisoned fists. A few times, I thought I caught glimpses of other humans, But no sooner did they turn our direction than their faces morphed and distorted. Werewolves, skinwalkers, djinn, and wraiths. What a cursed existence they must lead.
-100 points for any of the evil spirits, the koala chirped uneasily. Good luck ending that life with more than you started, though. -250 for the vampire or the werewolves. You'll need to do some really awful things in your previous life to get that low. The demons all cost more than -500. I might be able to get you a good deal lingering as the undead, though.
Maybe it was a demon calling me. I couldn't make out its words anymore, but I could still feel them crawling down my spine.
And what's at the very bottom? I asked. If you lived the worst life possible and did it again for 1,000 years, what would you become?
The koala shrugged.
Don't know. Never gave anyone a body that cost more than -300 points before. Same with the very top. No one's been able to unlock that floor.
Jason the eagle soared back toward us with a giant bat twice its size in pursuit. The koala lifted a shard of broken marble from the stairs and hurled it at the bat, which veered away. The eagle shrieked, and the koala chuckled.
Jason says he knows what's at the bottom. That's where they keep the politicians.
Come on now, don't give me that face. What is this, a morgue? Our commotion drew more attention from these evil creatures. How long had they dwelled in the darkness, with only each other to vent their eternal rage upon? The chimera spread its massive lion paws and stretched luxuriously before lumbering toward the koala. My little guide backed away up the stairs, brandishing his clipboard before him like a shield.
Are you ready to go back up?
His voice was little more than a squeak, desperate and pleading. The chimera crouched, powerful muscles rippling as they prepared to launch. The serpent above its back wiggled with anticipation.
Let's get out of here, I said.
The koala didn't need to be told twice. It dashed up the stairs in giant bounds. The chimera couldn't resist the running target. Powerful clawed feet propelled it into the air to bound after the little creature. I pressed myself to the railing and let it pass. The way was clear. I turned my back on the light and took my chance at the lower halls. Adrift in the swirling profusion between death and life, I was not alone as long as I carried the crawling whispers. Overwhelmed and confused, I continued to climb down the stairs. Haunted by the baleful cries of these miserable creatures, I would not be tempted by any lesser life than what the whisper promised me. I left behind the monstrous beasts and moved through a skeletal hall. Leering skulls on the ground turned to watch me pass. Strange, alien creatures began mingling with the dwindling remaining options. Seraphic beings made of light and shadow, and deformed abominations whose skin ran down their bones like candle wax. There, on the side, a dark, cloaked figure watched me, clutching a long-bladed scythe that arched over its head. Cruel, tusked faces and muscular behemoths lumbered out of my way. I did not belong, but somehow they let me pass, as if recognizing the unrelenting purpose that drove me deeper. What began as curiosity continued as obsession. There were no more torches this far down, but somehow it still seemed to be growing lighter as I descended. I was relieved when the stairway finally terminated on a circular marble dais. In fact, I was standing on a balcony that overlooked a new world with its own source of light. But no, it wasn't a new world at all. Despite only going downward, somehow, I was at the very top of the cathedral, right below the golden dome. Disoriented, I spun around to look back the way I had come. The marble stairs were only going down behind me. I was so high in the air that I felt like I was looking from an airplane at the thronging animals in the distance. The highest pinnacle was buried in the deepest pit, and there was only one room that served both the top and the bottom of this place. I looked over the balcony at all the minuscule animals, eagerly dancing in their new bodies. All sounds from below faded and combined into a single, omnipresent hymn. All sounds but the whisper on my skin,
and the rapid burst of knocking on the lone door. This wasn't like the other doors. Its metallic composition swam in perpetual motion, rippling and glistening like a pool of oil. Three ponderous iron bars were bolted across the frame to prevent it from opening outward, each engraved with mystic runes beyond my comprehension. This must be the most expensive life. I must need the right amount of points to open the door. But then again, maybe I had already circumvented that part by taking this unusual route to the top. The knocking came again, rapid, urgent, a prisoner desperately calling for aid without wanting to alert the guards. I pressed myself against the shifting door to listen and called, "Hello? Is someone in there? Have you been looking for me?" A hissing sound like high-pressure steam bursting through its confinement. The bolts that secured the iron bars began to slide outward on their own. I jumped back and ran to the balcony in search of my guide. There he was now, climbing up the stairs from the pit to rejoin his spiritual throng so far below. He was looking around, but couldn't guess where I was. Behind me, a clanging ring made me jump. The first iron bar had come loose and dropped off the door. "Can anyone hear me?" I shouted down. But I was utterly alone. I took half a dozen steps toward the stairs, but the clang of the second iron bar sent me indecisively spinning back. And why not? What was the worst that could happen now that I was already dead? That sentiment did not endure through the dropping of the third bar. The whole door shimmered like a mirage in the desert, and then, without motion or warning, it was gone. Bile rose in my throat the instant I saw the creature. My legs buckled beneath me, and I crashed hard to my knees, vomiting profusely. It was all bile. Heaving again, my whole body convulsed from the swelling pressure. I released another dark torrent of blood, this time with lumps of degraded flesh and even what appeared to be an entire rotting organ contained within, which laboriously caught in my throat and had to be coughed out. I'd almost forgotten my own death for a while, but I had not escaped as far as I thought. "Come in," came the commanding whisper. I heard it normally, not like the synesthesia which crawled on me. The reverberation of those words shook me to my core all the same. I was powerless to refuse. Pulling myself through my own sick, not daring to look up again, I passed through the open door. Seeing the creature once had been enough. The humanoid being was swollen to the size of a cow, bloated with gas which unevenly deformed its corpulent frame. Open sores covered its body, weeping blood and pus to stream down its nakedness so thickly that it almost seemed a garment. Gaping mortal wounds punctured its chest and belly in many places, allowing clear sight all the way through to its broken and uneven ribs. Somehow, worst of all, the unblemished face of a young boy stared out from that facade of human life. "Are you alone?" His voice came from his mouth normally, so sweet and innocent. I was more alone than I'd ever been. I nodded, still not looking up. The room itself was minimal in the extreme, a concrete prison cell with no comfort besides a thin bamboo floor mat. "Yes, you are. You've always been alone, but not anymore," it said, hot, fetid air blowing across my face with each word. "Who are you?" I asked. "The highest life, the final prize. Come, sit with me. Be at ease." My body tensed so sharply that I thought I was about to vomit again. I remained on my knees. "Why would anyone want to be—" I stopped myself, but the child simply laughed with a sound like wind chimes. "No one would. But being at the top doesn't mean the best, just like being at the bottom doesn't make it worse. It simply means I have the greatest capacity to do both good and evil. I can create life or end it. Does that sound like a power you'd like to have?" I shook my head, finally daring another glance. The creature leaned forward on its mat, its terribly clean and perfect face mere inches from mine. I don't want that power either, which is why I remain in this place. My influence is too great, and any good or evil I bring into existence is multiplied countless times. If I allow that to happen, then I will die with so many points that I'm forced to be reborn within the same cursed form.
So, you have the power to do anything, but instead, you sit here and do nothing?
Not nothing. Not helping, not hurting. I wait for death. That's the only way for me to reset to 0 points and have another chance to begin again. But death does not come easily for one such as me.
The child waved a tortured hand across its bloated and devastated body.
Unless, of course...
The child's face was drawing closer again, stretching on an impossibly long neck. The stench was too foul to breathe through my nose, but even having the air enter my mouth was enough to taste its rot.
"You called me here to kill you, then?"
I said, as matter-of-factly as I could, not wishing to cause offense.
"You want to start over?" "You aren't the first to try," he said, gesturing at the wounds which scoured his body. "But through revulsion or weakness or cowardice, each has failed, so far. Will you be the one to show me mercy?"
The thought of even getting close enough to harm the creature almost had me retching again.
"I still don't understand, though," I said, buying time. "If you're the supreme power here, why can't you save yourself?" "The supreme power?"
Laughter like the wind, so sweet and sad.
"Death is the supreme power, and I am his servant like any other. Don't think I have not tried to take my own life before. The act carries such significance that I simply find myself reborn in the same body. Here, you will need this."
A trembling hand reached out to me, its obese fingers fused at the joints. I recoiled by reflex, but I felt such pity for the creature that I fought against my instincts and accepted the black dagger from his grasp.
"How do I end you?"
"Through the eye," he begged.
"Are you sure?"
Such a dazzling smile from such a loathsome creature. I can't imagine how much he must have suffered. I'm sure I would have asked the same in his place. The cool, dark metal felt righteous in my hand as I steeled myself for the killing blow. Some nagging doubt lingered in the back of my head, but I was so mesmerized by my disgust and sympathy that I could think of no other course.
"Won't you at least close your eyes?" I asked.
His smile widened, unnaturally broad, with too many teeth for the child's face.
"I've been looking forward to this moment for as long as I can remember. I'm not going to miss a thing."
Worried that any hesitation would steal my resolve, I took the dagger in both hands and plunged it deep. The eye did not close, even as the blade slipped through. It cut so easily that I felt no resistance until the very hilt was embedded in the boy's face, the only unspoiled part of him, now in ruin. The smile faltered for the briefest instant, before returning, then grimacing again as though fluctuating between agony and ecstasy. The massive body trembled, but I didn't relinquish my grip until its last spasm overbalanced the monstrosity. I scrambled to get out of the way as it toppled face first toward me, slamming against the ground to further pound the dagger within its skull. There was no way out but down the stairs. Crowds of animals parted around me as I returned from the highest balcony. Claws and talons pointed at me with undisguised fascination. Whispers and murmurs from the multifarious assembly swelled and then faded as I approached, like the ocean waves.
"I think I'd like to come back as a cat," I told the koala when I found him again.
He was easy enough to locate, standing out in the open by the lower stair, paralyzed with shock. Cats seem to have things figured out.
"Jason! Mixie! Anyone!"
The koala shouted in a hoarse, strained voice from the corner of his mouth, not taking his eyes off me for a moment.
"What is it? Did I do something wrong?"
An owl landed nearby, its head cocking from side to side to get a better look.
"Hey, Mixie?"
the koala said from the corner of his mouth, not taking his eyes off me.
"How many points do you get for killing God? Has anyone seen that number before?"
I swallowed hard, but I couldn't get rid of the dry lump in my throat.
"You're sure I didn't lose points?"
He stared dumbly at his clipboard.
"Considering what you would have done if you hadn't, yeah. It says act of mercy on your file now. You're way in the positive, my man."
"I'm not going to become that thing, am I?"
"Not yet. You came here with 478, so that's what you're going back with. But shit, man, you've got so many now that..."
"I don't want to be like that."
"Then you'll have to spend all the points you got in your new life. No matter what life comes next, you're going to have to steal all the good you can to get your score back down."
One of the birds shrieked and laughed. Other animals joined in, giggling, chittering, cawing, and roaring.
"I don't want that life. I don't want to hurt anyone."
Amused or taunting, the bestial chorus was maddening. I didn't belong here. I couldn't go back to life now. Only the darkness of the pit could hide my shame. I ran for the stairs and sprinted below, away from the animals and their laughter. I belonged with the demons now. They didn't see the monster I killed. They didn't understand how cursed a life could be. Only the demons could understand me now. Only the Reaper himself, who waited for me in the shadows by the Iron Gate. And I remembered the words, "Death is the supreme power here. It is waiting for you." The words on my skin, they had been coming from him all along. Death's cloak was black. Not the color black, but its essence. It was as though seeing a tiger after a lifetime of looking at a child's crude drawing and thinking that's all a tiger was. Reality flowed around his scythe like a brush through watercolors, and I could see each elementary particle and time itself sunder across its blade. "Surely this," I thought, staring at the Reaper, "this is why we were taught without words to fear death." I clutched at my chest, cowering from the intensity of the Reaper's presence. I watched, bewildered, as my hand passed through my own chest, flowing like translucent mist. I reached for the iron bars of the gate and saw I moved through them as well. I knew then nothing could hide me from the Spectre's grasp, for he was the only real thing left in this world. I was already leaving this place. "You're late." They weren't words. My head ached from the strain of knowing he had been waiting for me since I hurried past him the first time. My lateness was burned into my awareness, imparted as unequivocally as gravity. "We don't have time for the usual speech. Hurry now." I felt myself swept up around the Reaper like dirt in a hurricane. Before I knew what was happening, we had passed straight through the gate and were descending through the lower halls of the cathedral again. This time, we moved at such a frenzied pace that the world around me blurred into a dizzying tunnel of flashing torches. "If you're lucky, it won't get you this time." I had too many questions, all fighting for attention in the forefront of my brain without any making their way out. "You're quiet. I admire that. People usually ask too much."
"What's the point?"
I asked at last. My voice felt flat and dead compared to his overwhelming substance. "How can I try to comprehend what's waiting for me now?"
"You can't, but it's still human nature to ask."
We weren't slowing. If anything, our pace was increasing. I wasn't running or flying or anything of that nature. It was more like the rest of the world was moving around us while we stood still. A vague darkness and a heavy damp smell made me guess that we'd gone deeper underground, but I couldn't say for sure.
"One question, then," I begged. "If your death,
Then what are you trying to save me from?
And that is why questions are pointless. Death is not a place or a person. It's all there is.
A troubling thought, made more so by the growing howl pulsing through the rocks around me. The air grew warmer and denser now. The sound continued to mount as though the world itself was suffering.
Then what is it?
What I'm here to protect you from. The rocks split from a flash of his scythe, and the ground opened farther into a sprawling cavern dominated by a subterranean lake.
But I thought you said you were all there is.
No, I said death was all there is. We weren't moving any longer. Light glinted off the scythe from some unseen source and streamed into the lake like a tributary. Once inside, the light didn't reflect or dissipate. It swirled and danced as luminescent oil.
I thought you were death.
Death is not a person. The voice was getting farther away. I could barely hear it anymore and only felt the words echo across my skin. The light was taking a life of its own inside the water. The still surface began to churn with spectral energy. It took my scattered mind a long while to realize that I was the energy flowing into the lake. I still felt tangled up with the Reaper, but we now existed as a beam of light boiling into the water. I knew I wouldn't understand, but that didn't stop me from feeling frustrated. If death is all there is, then what is it? What was waiting for me?
The water pressed cold. There was no air to speak, but I had no body to need it.
It is here. Something was in the water around me. Hands grabbed me by the legs and began dragging me downward.
Light flashed from the scythe. Then again, the hands let go, and the howling rose in deafening cascades.
The Reaper was fighting something, although I couldn't make any sense of the battle except for the madness of thrashing water.
The howling earth reached its crescendo, and the screams made the water around me convulse and contract like living fluid.
Had the Reaper slashed it? Was I safe?
Just when I thought I was beginning to gain control, the hands from below clutched me once more.
I lurched downward, struggling in vain against their implacable grip.
What is here?
I tried to shout against the suffocating liquid.
What's happening?
But I couldn't sense the Reaper's presence any longer. The heat was unbearable, but the hands dragging me down were ice. I became aware of a blinding light at the bottom of the lake, and though I struggled, the hands dragged me inexorably deeper.
I'm sorry. I couldn't fight it off.
The Reaper's voice was coming from so far away now.
We will try again next time.
The pressure, the heat, the noise, the hands dragging me into the light. I closed my eyes and screamed. I was free from the water now, but I just kept screaming. I couldn't bear to look at it, whatever had stolen me, whatever was death but wasn't, whatever even the Reaper couldn't defeat.
Then a voice spoke, real human words from a real human mouth.
My senses were so distraught and overwhelmed that I couldn't make sense of them, but I'm guessing they were something like,
"Congratulations, he's a healthy baby boy."
Most people can't remember the day they die or the day they were born. I happen to remember both, and I know that they are the same.
You've been listening to Heaven's Prisoner by Tobias Wade. Tobias Wade is a former neuroscience researcher, now turned novelist. He runs his own publishing house, Haunted House Books, and you can find more of his work at tobiaswade.com. Now, here's Smoking Kills by Micah Edwards.
It's been almost 20 years since I had my last cigarette. For a long time, I was certain that I'd never have one again.
I never stopped wanting them, though. Tonight, I'm ending my long wait. I'm finally going to smoke a cigarette. I suspect this one really will be my last one ever. So before I do, I want to relate what happened. It started in an alley behind a 7-Eleven. I was 14 and hanging out with my friend Derek, who was 16 and looked old enough for the store clerk to sell him cigarettes. I'd been smoking for almost a year at that point. My parents had caught me just a week before, which was why I was smoking behind the 7-Eleven then. They'd cut off my allowance and thrown out the pack I had at the house, which was a hefty financial hit for a 14-year-old. "Go get my soda from the car," said Derek. As far as last words go, these were pretty lame. I trotted off around the corner, then realized I needed his keys. I spun on my heel to ask for them. "Hey, I..." In that instant, Derek exploded. It was horrifying. One second, Derek was standing there, cigarette to his lips, taking a deep drag. Then he was just gone. Nothing but a whispered blast of red mist. It coated the brick wall and spattered over my face, stinging my eyes. I could taste the coppery flavor of blood. A man stood where Derek had been. He was taller and slimmer than Derek had been. He wore a neatly tailored black suit, covered now in a fine mist of gore. He shook himself like a dog, sending red spatter in all directions, where it joined the rest of Derek on the asphalt. It was a practiced gesture. He was not at all surprised to be lightly coated in blood. I, on the other hand, was still standing with one hand on the corner of the building, mouth agape. My cigarette dangled limply from my other hand. Even with the blood on my face, I had no understanding of what had just happened. I remember thinking that maybe Derek had transformed, like in Power Rangers. Except instead of turning into a cool warrior, he'd changed into a lawyer. The man locked eyes with me. His lips quirked into a smile. Nothing about his attitude suggested that anything abnormal was happening. That was part of what made it so hard to process. He was acting like this was all perfectly ordinary. "I really thought you were heading the other way," he said. "I'm usually much better about that." "What?" was about all I could manage. I had too many questions that I needed answers to. Where was Derek? Who was this man? Was my friend okay? What was going on? "Witnesses are such a complication," he said. He took a pack of cigarettes out of his jacket pocket, tapped one out, and lit it. "Friends, though. You can trust a friend with secrets. Are we friends?" I don't think I managed any sound at all in response to that. The entire situation was surreal. I had to be dreaming. The man put the cigarette to his lips and breathed in deeply. In one swift motion, the entire thing burned to ash all the way back to his mouth. The man himself burned away at the same time. The disintegration started at his feet and sped upward, consuming his legs and torso and finally his head. The thin cylinder of ash, all that remained of the cigarette, dropped to the blood-soaked ground. I had no time to gawk at this latest impossibility because suddenly the man was directly in front of me, stepping through the narrow wisp of smoke wafting up from my forgotten cigarette. He ripped it open like torn fabric and grabbed me by the shirt, lifting and slamming me against the wall before I had even processed his arrival. "Are you a friend?" he snarled. His face was bestial, demonic. Its unforgiving lines were everything every sculpture of a devil had ever tried to capture. "Or are you just a witness?" "Friend!" I gasped out. The brick wall ground into my back. His knuckles were like a rock against my chest. I couldn't breathe in. I was certain at that moment that I was about to die, so I said the only word that seemed like it might buy me a few more seconds of life. "Very good, then." He looked legitimately pleased as he set me down and brushed off the front of my shirt. "Then I'm pleased to make your acquaintance. You can call me Ash."
My friend, I whispered.
"Yes, we're friends now." I was afraid to disagree with him, but he saw the slight shake of my head and realized that he had misunderstood my meaning.
Oh, you mean your other friend. He's very dead, I'm afraid. Unless he had a particularly rare blood type, they'll never even find enough to know what happened. He'll just be marked down as missing.
Tragic, but it happens.
He sighed. You'd think that being able to travel through smoke would be amazing. And honestly, it is. But the gray world is so... Well, there are a lot of complications. And once you make it through that and come back out, people always have so many questions. Who are you? Where did you come from? And how did you do that? It's exhausting, really.
He picked up my cigarette from the ground and took a short drag. As the tip flared, I saw that the white paper was stained with Derek's blood. The man, Ash, didn't seem to mind. He blew out a cloud of smoke and watched it drift away.
The thing about smoke is that it gets everywhere, and the gray world doesn't much care about inside and outside or solid objects. You can just come through wherever. It'll push things from the lesser world out of the way, as you saw. It's a bit messy, perhaps, but so are all of those questions you get otherwise.
He tapped me on the chest.
You don't ask a lot of questions.
I like that about you. It's why we're friends. Keep that in mind.
Ash reached into his jacket pocket, and I flinched backward. I was certain in that second that he was going to shoot me. I don't know why, after everything I'd seen, I thought he would do something as prosaic as that. I think it was just my mind trying to translate the overwhelming threat into something I could recognize.
He didn't pull out a gun. Instead, he took out the pack of cigarettes I'd seen him use earlier. He pressed it into my hand.
Here, a gift from a friend. If you ever need me, just light one up. I'll be there before the smoke clears.
Don't hold it in too long, though.
He smiled and winked, as if what he'd said was funny instead of a deadly threat. As if I hadn't just watched him detonate my friend for the sake of convenience. As if I had any doubt that he'd do the same to me if it suited him. I said nothing, though. I just stood there and stared as he breathed in the last of my cigarette, just as I had seen him do before, burning the entire thing at once and himself along with it. I stood there in the alley, dappled with blood and surrounded by the smell of cigarettes, staring at the empty air, until finally the pack of cigarettes he had given me slipped out of my numb fingers and fell to the ground. Something about that finally snapped me out of whatever trance I was in. I walked away, slowly and unsteadily at first, then picking up speed until finally I was running. Derek had driven to the 7-Eleven and we were at least 5 miles from my house, but I ran the entire way home without stopping once. By the time I got home, I was completely out of breath, but I managed to make it up the stairs and into the shower before I finally collapsed. I got in fully clothed and sagged against the wall as I let the water burn over me. It swirled pink in the bottom of the tub, the last remnants of Derek. I knew people would ask about him, and that I would lie. Friends kept secrets. I wasn't at all sure that I wanted to be Ash's friend, but I was positive that I didn't want any other option. The last of my energy drained away with the stained water. I stumbled to my bedroom and was asleep almost before I hit the bed. I woke the next morning to my father shaking me awake.
"We're very disappointed in you," he said.
"What? In what?"
I couldn't imagine how he knew what had happened in that alley, or what he would have expected me to do differently.
"Smoking again. Your mother and I made it clear how we feel about that."
Behind him, my mother was rummaging through my drawers, looking for contraband.
"I wasn't... I didn't..."
"Don't lie to me. This room reeks of smoke. You could have at least opened a window. You're stinking up the entire house."
He wasn't wrong. The smell of smoke hung heavily in the room, but I'd been asleep the entire time.
"Found them."
My mother triumphantly held up a package of cigarettes. My heart skipped a beat as I recognized them. Not just the brand, but the specific package. The bloody smear on one corner made it clear that these were the ones Ash had handed me in the alley. My father frowned.
All right, we're going to try a little aversion therapy. This is what my father did when I thought I might try smoking. He took me outside and made me smoke the entire pack. Come on, let's go.
No! I panicked at the idea. Smoking even one cigarette would be foolhardy. The entire pack? Breath after breath of smoke in my lungs? I might as well throw myself out the window right now.
You're the one who wanted to smoke, so come on, let's do it.
I screamed. I cried. I flailed. My father ignored it all and dragged me downstairs by the arm, the dreaded cigarettes clutched in his other fist. I begged and pleaded as he sat me down on the porch. I clenched my lips and turned my head away as he tried to put the cigarette in my mouth. I think he still thought I was just throwing a tantrum about being caught, until he struck a match to actually light it, and I threw up, all over his shirt. He dragged me back inside with a disgusted look on his face. As we passed my incredulous mother, all he said was, "I think he's learned his lesson." The worst part was, I hadn't. I wasn't going to smoke a cigarette, obviously, but I still wished I could. I craved them fiercely in the following weeks, and even when the physical need died down, I still missed what they'd represented. They were rebellion. They were freedom. They were adult. The fact that they meant instant death stopped me from having one, but it didn't stop me from wanting one. My parents threw out Ash's cigarettes, of course. Not that it did any good. I found more packs in all sorts of odd places. In my locker at school, stuck in the chain locking my bike, in one of my shoes on the shoe rack. The packs were always opened with one cigarette missing. If I looked around, I could usually find a long cylinder of ash. I never knew what to do with the packs. I didn't want to throw them away and offend Ash, but I certainly wasn't going to use them. I mainly let them pile up in my school locker. It seemed the safest place. I couldn't have them at the house, of course. I was terrified of my parents finding them and forcing me to smoke them to learn a lesson. It wasn't just that I didn't want to die. I wanted my parents to stay safe. I knew how Ash felt about witnesses. Every month or so, I'd see Ash, usually from some distance away. He'd step out of a doorway and catch my eye as he exaggeratedly shook red droplets from his hands. He'd take a cigarette from a pack and tilt it toward me in an obvious gesture of offering. I'd smile and shake my head. We were friends, after all. I had to look friendly. This was all a game to him. It was obvious that he knew he held all of the power. Playing along kept me alive, though, so I performed my role. "I never see you smoke anymore," he said one day when he'd actually come close enough to talk. "Don't you trust me?"
"Of course I do,"
I lied. "But you said the gray world is complicated." "It is." His voice held the slightest edge of menace. He didn't like where I was directing this. I bailed out. "I just like things uncomplicated."
"Smart," said Ash.
He tapped me on the chest, his usual gesture of approval. I didn't like how it resonated in my lungs. I think he knew that. "You should do something with those cigarettes I bring you, though. Give them to your friends." None of my friends smoked. I'd cut ties with everyone who did. It probably would have been fine to hang out with them in groups, but I couldn't stop picturing ending up alone with one of them one day, even briefly, and seeing them light up a cigarette and then burst, just like Derek had. There would be nothing but the mist and Ash laughing about it. I did start giving them away, though. I gave a pack to a homeless man who asked me for change one day. It wasn't really on purpose. He asked for money, I padded my pockets, and I'd found the pack earlier that day and still had it on me. His eyes lit up when I handed it over.
"Thanks, man," he said.
I hoped that he would get to enjoy them. I tried to not think about Ash. I saw the homeless man again a few weeks later, panhandling on the same corner. It gave me hope and a huge sense of relief, but also allowed me to give myself permission to hand out the other packs. He'd made it, after all. It wasn't a death sentence. I could keep myself safe from Ash's potential wrath without sacrificing anyone else, necessarily. But I still didn't give the packs to anyone I knew. I'd give them to clerks at gas stations or coffee shops. When I got older, I'd give them to people at bars. Most folks accepted them when I told them I'd quit and was getting rid of the rest of the pack. It was true enough. No one ever asked how long ago I'd quit. Every pack held that nicotine temptation. It was made worse by the fact that I couldn't possibly have one. Ash wouldn't have spent years keeping cigarettes tantalizingly in front of me if he wasn't waiting for me to slip up. Every pack was like a sweating stick of dynamite, ready to explode. Boom. Missed. Just like Derek. I don't know how many people I killed over the years. Looking back, I can admit that that's what I was doing. Ash dropped off a pack or two every month, so call it 20 a year? That's 400 people I handed live grenades to, all without a word of warning. They were all smokers anyway, and there was nothing special about the cigarettes Ash brought me. They were all sorts of brands, all types. He could go through any smoke. They weren't in any more danger than they had been before I gave them the packs. That was my rationalization all along. But the gray world is complicated. I have no idea if I was ever right about that. Maybe I marked every one of them. It doesn't matter much now. Ash is dead. I saw it on the news yesterday. His name wasn't actually Ash, which shouldn't have surprised me. I spent 20 years thinking of him by that name, though. It was strange to see another one on the Chiron under his smiling, professional photo. He was the CFO of a cigarette company, which is why his murder made the news. They'd said he'd been stabbed, and the police were looking for any information. They didn't provide so much as a sketch of the assailant, which meant that they had nothing at all. They didn't show the body, obviously, but I wonder what the stab marks looked like. Were they normal, or was there something odd, like perhaps they'd come from the inside? I don't know. I don't know anything about the gray world. I never asked a lot of questions. Friends didn't do that sort of thing. Not friends who wanted to stay alive. But I do know that this wasn't a random mugging. This had something to do with the gray world. When I saw the news, my first thought was, I'm free. My second thought was, I can have a cigarette again. The thought hit me like a bolt between the eyes. I could feel the cigarette in my mouth, the rush of smoke into my lungs. I hadn't felt that sensation in 2 decades, but it was like it had never left. The smooth sensation of the nicotine taking hold, the utter freedom of it all. I wanted it. I'd been wanting it since I was 14. And finally, finally, I could have it. I walked to the store. I went to the front counter. I asked the cashier for a pack. For the first time in my life, I bought my own pack of cigarettes from a store. I carried it outside, feeling the unfamiliar sensation of the plastic wrap under my fingers. Every pack that Ash had brought me had been opened, missing the one he'd used to take himself back to the gray world. This one was new. This one was mine. Then, as I turned the pack over in my hands, it suddenly occurred to me, I didn't want it. Cigarettes had always meant freedom, doubly so since Ash denied them to me. But now that he was gone, freedom meant freedom to choose. I didn't have to make the choice I'd made at 14. I didn't have to do things simply to rebel. I could make my own decisions. I was free to do whatever I wanted. I threw the pack in a trash can, unopened, and I walked home feeling lighter than I ever had. I entered my house, flopped down on my couch, heaved a huge, relieved sigh, and saw the pack of cigarettes on the end table. There was a note on these. It said, "To Ash's pet." Pet is the right word. We were never friends. In all those years, he never even asked my name. I was just a thing he kept around for his amusement. And now that he's gone, it seems that whoever killed him is planning on cleaning house. I could still run, of course. Or I could start a new game and try to amuse whatever new thing is out there. I could stay alive a while longer, probably. I think, instead, I'll have that cigarette that I've been waiting for all these years. I'm going to light it. I'm going to savor it. And then I'm going to breathe the smoke in and hold it in my lungs for a long, long time. I suspect for the rest of my life. You've just heard Smoking Kills by Micah Edwards. Micah Edwards graduated from William & Mary with a degree in English and no particular plans to use it. He now finds himself occupying various roles as an author, a comedian, and a database administrator, depending on the day of the week. He resides in Richmond, Virginia, the world's premier home of authors named Micah Edwards. And just like a puff of smoke in the breeze, this episode of Horror Hill is over and done. Thanks to Tobias Wade and Micah Edwards for tonight's tales, and thanks to all of you fine people for joining me. As always, I'll be returning next week at the same day and time, so mark your calendars. I'll see you then, and until that time, stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted, narrated, scored, and finalized by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Additional music by Nikki McSorley. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at submissions@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your work considered for future production. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, why not help us spread our dark presence online? You can follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. It helps us out a lot and also keeps you up to date on new episodes. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend signing up to be a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights. Head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com to get started. If you're looking for someone to narrate or handle audio production for your own personal project, I just so happen to know a guy. Email me at ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com and we can talk details. That's ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.